The following is a presentation of Remnant.
I am reaching from the depths of the soul. Hear me pleading. I'm a child, I'm a poor. I am needing to draw on the virtues in me.
Hi, this is Jerry Gotze, co-pastor of Remnant. Remnant was begun with one goal, to touch people with God's incredible love. My prayer is that this study will comfort you, challenge you, and bring you one step closer to being the person God wants you to be. If this study is helpful or if you need more information, please drop me a line at jerry@remnantchurchonline.com. God bless you, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to a message from Pastor Jerry Gotze.
Well, good evening. And I say evening because it's not Sunday morning when we normally would have recorded this message. Instead, it's Tuesday night. I'm in my office at home. See, what happened was Sunday morning we had a technical difficulty. And that's really a nice way of saying that somebody forgot to press the button. But we decided to go ahead and try and record it here. It's going to be a little bit different because we don't have the crowd to play off of. But hopefully the content will be the same. So sit back and enjoy. And let's see what God has for us. In 1 Samuel chapter 16, David is anointed king. God spoke to Samuel the prophet saying in verse 1, I'm sending you to Jesse of Bethlehem. I have chosen one of his sons to be king. So Samuel went to see Jesse and told him to gather his sons so they could join him in the sacrifice. When Jesse and his sons arrived, Samuel saw the eldest Eliab and thought in verse 6, surely the Lord's anointed stands here before the Lord. He was tall. He was good looking. He was built. He was the guy. But then in verse 7, the Lord said to Samuel, do not consider his height, for I have rejected him. The Lord doesn't look at the things man looks at. Man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. In other words, look, Samuel, he might be a stud muffin, but he's not the guy I've chosen. So they go through all the remaining sons of Jesse. There's seven of them. And each time he knew in his heart, this is not the one. The Lord has not chosen this one. So Samuel said to Jesse in verse 11 and 12, are these all the sons you have? Well, they're still the youngest, Jesse answered, but he's tending the sheep. Samuel said, send for him. We will not sit down until he arrives. His own family thought so little of David that they didn't even bother to bring him up, because surely this little freckle-faced, snot-nosed kid wasn't going to be the king. It had to be, you know, Eliab or one of the other brothers. You know, some of them were taller, some of them were rounder, some of them were this, some of them were that. But nobody thought David could be king. When David got there, the Lord spoke to Samuel in verse 12 and said, rise and anoint him. He's the one. Verse 13. So Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the presence of his brothers, which had to make them great, feel great. And from that day on, the Spirit of the Lord came upon David in power. Now notice what happened. David presented himself to the Lord, no matter what anybody else thought. God chose him, and then God gave him power. It's kind of the way it works in us. We've got to present ourselves to God. Once we present ourselves to God, then God can use us. And there's something special here that we see about the grace of God and how God chooses us to use for his glory. When God looks at us, there are some things he sees and some things he doesn't see. And that's what we're going to talk about. God doesn't see you the way other people see you. Other people see you according to their limited knowledge and understanding. God sees you as you really are, and he sees you for what you've become. People may see in you the same things that David and the family saw in him. He was scrawny, he was little, he, you know, never going to amount to much, he just takes care of sheep. But I need you to know, and you need you to know, that God doesn't look at you that way. So, there are some things that God doesn't see in you. Let's talk about them. First of all, God doesn't see you as unnecessary. One of the most telling aspects of this story is the fact that Jesse brought his sons to Samuel to be evaluated as to who would be the potential king, and David was left out. They left him with the sheep. Apparently, in Jesse's opinion, David was so unlikely to be named as king that he was left out of the process completely. As far as his family was concerned, David was unnecessary. You see the attitude again in the next chapter, 1 Samuel, when Goliath defies the army of Israel. Now here's the setting. The armies of Israel come running out of the battle. They're dressed in all their stuff. They've got their swords. They've got their shields. They've got all their armor on. They come running out in the battle. And Goliath comes and stands before them, shakes his fists, and they all turn around and run like sissies. Then they stand, yeah, you know, the sun was in the wrong position, and, you know, we just couldn't handle that today. And, you know, maybe tomorrow, will be better. The problem is they kept doing this day after day after day. So Jesse sends David up to see his brothers in the battle. He takes some cheese and loaves of bread.
Yeah, that's good, huh?
Hey, I know you guys are in battle. Here's your cheese. And when he gets to the scene of the battle, he's shocked at what he sees. He doesn't see God's army fighting for God. He sees God's army fleeing in fear, and it upsets him. And he asks them, hey, what's going on here? Aren't you God's army? And his brother Eliab is the first one to attack him. In 1 Samuel 17:28, he says, why have you come down here? And with whom did you leave those few sheep in the desert? And that's a huge smack. I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is. You came down here only to watch the battle. Hey, who's minding your sheep, Sparky? And I know you only came down here to watch us die. You know, we've all been in situations like that where we've been told directly or indirectly by those in charge that we don't have anything to offer the situation. We've basically been told, your help isn't needed here. We can get by without you. But you know what? In God's eyes, you're not unnecessary. He doesn't leave you out. There is something that you can do for him. There's a contribution that you can make. One of the terms that we use at Remnant a lot is divine appointments. Every day we have these divine appointments. We have people we come into contact with and we don't even know about it. And God puts us in the right place at the right time to minister his grace. It could be just a spoken word. It could be a smile. It might actually be us doing something for somebody. We never know. But God doesn't see you as unnecessary. Quite the opposite. He sees you as very necessary. In fact, God's whole way of doing things is based on us being necessary to his work. Don't ever think you don't count, because you do. Second thing God doesn't see, he doesn't see your age. After Samuel had seen Jesse's older sons, he said, are these all the sons you have? Well, they're still the youngest, Jesse said, but he's tending the sheep. The youngest one, he's like 13, 14. It's a little freckle-faced Judean kid. You don't want him. But see, Jesse knew that one of his sons was going to be anointed by the prophet Samuel. But David wasn't considered because of his age. As far as Jesse was concerned, David was too young to be king. But he wasn't too young as far as God was concerned. Yeah, in some ways today, we allow our youth to grow up too fast. They're exposed to unspeakable things on television and in movies. And I hear parents allowing their 5 and 6 year old kids to watch Saw movies. You know, where people are hacked up and chopped to bits, and they're allowing their young children to see this. They're watching unspeakable violence, and because mom wants to go see the movie and she doesn't have anywhere to leave the kid, she takes the kid with her. And unfortunately, some of these kids are so desensitized to violence that they act it out, and that's when they become one of my customers at the sheriff's office. But in other ways, we let them grow up too slowly. I mean, there are people that are 30 years old and still live in their mom's basement. And not because they have to, like they were working a good job, and they just never saw any reason to move out. We have kids who have never even tried to get a job because, well, why should they? We stunt their growth because we keep looking at them as kids. Let me tell you something. God is more concerned with your availability and drive than he is your age. It's amazing what a young person can accomplish when they're given the opportunity or when they seize the opportunity. I watched it at one of the churches I was part of, where a 13-year-old girl ushered in an incredible revival simply because she wasn't afraid to try. Simply because she knew what God had put in her heart. She told the church what God had put in her heart, and the place just caught fire. And I watched for 6 months or so as that church grew and amazing things happened, all because some 13-year-old kid decided she was going to do what God wanted her to do. When I was youth pastor in El Cajon, I had some kids in my youth group, and their dad came to me. He was a board member. He came to me and he said, you know, I think you're putting these kids under too much pressure to win the lost. And my jaw hit the floor. I looked at him like he was from another planet or something, because I'd never heard that before. Last time I read the Bible, it says we're to go and make disciples. And I looked at him and I said, you know what? Just because you're not following what God wants you to do, don't think that they're not going to. And he walked away, and that was the last conversation we ever had about it. And I watched his sons blossom. I watched his sons grow into great young men of God. Because somebody believed they could. I had a guy tell me, a pastor tell me one time, that a youth pastor only can hope that he can make his kids, hold his kids in the church until they get to adulthood. That they can't really be true disciples. And I looked at him and I said, if I believed that, I wouldn't be a youth pastor. Don't sell young people short. 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 12, Paul writes to Timothy and says, don't let anyone think less of you because you're young. Be an example to all believers in what you say and the way you live and your love, your faith, and your purity. Our young people today can and should and will be examples to older folks who are too jaded or too lazy or whatever reasons they've come up with. There can be an example of love and faith and purity. The way they live can have these older people say, you know what? They've got something that I need. That's the way it ought to be. Now, by the same token, don't let anybody tell you you're too old either. There may come a time when we retire from our jobs, but we never retire from our greatest vocation in life, and that's serving God. My grandfather was 93 years old, still pastoring. He refused to give up being a pastor, even though he couldn't preach every Sunday. And he would tell me great stories about the old times. He would tell me great stories about growing up Pentecost and all the things that he had heard when he was, all the things that had gone on in his ministry, and just amazing stories. And I'd listen to these and just think, wow, it's so incredible. And then he'd get a twinkle in his eyes and he'd look at me and say, but you know what, Jerry? I believe God's best days are ahead of us. See, he loved to look back, but he loved even more to look forward. Don't tell me about what you did for God 20 years ago. Don't tell me about what you did for God 20 days ago. Today's a new day. And if you've got breath, you can serve God. I love the story out of Joshua 14 of Caleb. Caleb is 85 years old at this point, and they're divvying up the land. And Caleb finally speaks up and he says, now, as you can see, the Lord has kept me alive and well, as he promised for all these 45 years since Moses made this promise, even while Israel wandered in the wilderness. Today, I'm 85 years old. I'm as strong now as I was when Moses sent me on that journey. And I can still travel and fight as well as I could then. So give me the hill country that the Lord promised me. You remember that as scouts, we found the descendants of Anak living there in great walled towns. But if the Lord is with me, I'll drive them out of the land, just as the Lord said. The descendants of Anak were giants. They're huge. In fact, the rumor was that they were actually angels that had mated with human beings. So Caleb, 85 years old, isn't looking for an easy road. He says, hey, give me the land where the giants are. I'm not scared. Because I've got God on my side. God promised me that. He's not going to let me down now. What has God promised you? What is in your life that God has promised you and that you know that you can do? Don't tell me you're too old. You never outlive your usefulness to God. Don't tell me you're too young. Don't tell me you're too busy. Don't tell me you're too anything to serve God. Because God says, you know what? We need to follow. And as long as God grants us breath, we have an opportunity to serve the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. There's no greater calling on this earth. There's nothing that you can do that is more important, that is more rewarding than serving God. And you can make all kinds of excuses why you can't, but that's just what they are. They're excuses. My grandpa used to tell me that an excuse is a lie in the skin of the truth. So what's your excuse? Too young? Too old? Too sick? Too tired? Too lazy? Too uneducated? Too educated? None of it matters. All that matters is that we're ready to serve God. God doesn't see your age. And then finally, God doesn't see you as limited. Samuel asked about David, and he was told in verse 11, well, they're still the youngest, Jesse answered, but he's tending the sheep. Tending the sheep. That's all they thought David was good for. They didn't see his possibilities. They didn't see his courage or his leadership skills. They couldn't have guessed in the very near future David would boldly stand before Goliath on the battlefield and win one of the greatest victories in Israel's history. They had no way of knowing that this little snot-nosed kid was in just a little bit going to stand in front of this giant that everybody else was afraid of with some rocks and a slingshot and take his head off. How humbling must that have been for all the soldiers who ran out to battle every day and then turned around and ran back to their tents and cowered in fear. Here comes this kid who won't even wear any armor. He tried Saul's armor. It was too big for him. He ran out to battle, and Goliath yelled in his face, you know, I'm going to feed you to the birds. And David looked at him and said, wait a second. No, you've got it mixed up, dude. I'm going to cut off your head. I'm going to feed you to the birds. Because today, the people of this world is going to see that there is a God in Israel. And that he's given me strength. He's given me power. And you're nothing but a big guy that's about to hit the ground and make a big thud. And that's exactly what happened. When David's family looked at him, they didn't know that David would lead a mighty band of warriors through victory after victory. You want to do a great study? Go through and look at all the exploits of David and his mighty men. And how David did so many great things simply because he knew that God had called him and he knew that God had given him power. They didn't know that David would govern his people with the hand of God in his life. All they knew about David was that he was the brother who took care of the sheep while they went and applied for the job of king. Oh, and by the way, they didn't get a second interview. David got the job. See, you may be tempted to see yourself as just a school teacher or just a construction worker, or just a businessman, or just a student, or just any number of things. But God doesn't see you that way. God doesn't see you according to your limitations. He sees you according to your possibilities. If you could get rid of the I'm just in my life, what could you accomplish? If you could decide, wait a second, I'm more than this. I'm not what these other people see in me. I'm something more. You know, when you look at me and you try to describe Jerry Gotz, you could say, well, he's, you know, about 6 foot tall and he's fat and he doesn't have much hair. In fact, he really didn't have any hair, hardly. And you know what? All those things about me are right. But that's not who I am. Who I am is Jerry Gotz. I'm Lynette's husband. I'm the father of Isaac and Christopher. I'm the grandfather of Soren and Ellie, which is pretty cool, by the way. I'm one of the co-pastors of Remnant, a church that really strives to do great things in the hearts of people. I'm the scientific investigation supervisor for the Imperial County Sheriff's Office. What I am is a guy who tries to make the world a better place everywhere he goes. I'm a guy who wakes up in the morning and hopes more than anything else that God will use him to touch the lives of somebody that day. That's who I am. I'm not just a dad. I'm not just a grandpa. I'm not just a crime scene guy or just a pastor. I'm one of the people that God is using to touch the lives of other people. So when you start to think that maybe you're just maybe you need to think a little harder. Maybe you need to see you the way God sees you. And quit imposing these limitations upon yourself that God doesn't impose on you. You know, the greatest limiting factor in God using you is you. It's not God. The one person who will keep you more than any other thing from being used by God is you. Stubbornness, your own fears, your own insecurities, those are things that are keeping you from being used by God. What if you could just serve God and get past the what if? Or I'm just a. I love Tony Campolo, Dr. Tony Campolo, incredible guy, sociology professor at Eastern College in Pennsylvania, a tremendous, tremendous speaker. I don't always agree with Dr. Campolo's politics, but man, he always blows me away whenever he speaks. While he was building up this great resume of all the things that he has done, though, his wife stayed home and raised their two kids and just decided that that was her best job. So when she would travel with Dr. Campolo, she would find herself engaged in conversations with some very influential, sophisticated people. After one such trip, Peggy told Tony that sometimes when she visits these powerful people, she finds herself intimidated and even questioning her self-worth. Tony said to her, well, why don't you come up with something you could say when you meet people that will let them know how strongly you value what you do and how dramatically you feel that it's urgent and crucial and important. So, not long after that, Tony and Peggy Campolo were at a party when a woman said to Peggy in a rather condescending tone, well, my dear, what is it that you do? Peggy Campolo looked at her and said, I'm nurturing two Homo sapiens into the dominant values of the Judeo-Christian tradition in order that they might become instruments for the transformation of the social order into the kind of eschatological utopia God envisioned from the beginning of time. The woman looked at her and said, oh, well, I'm just a lawyer. It all depends how you look at it, I guess, isn't it? Two stonemasons were building a wall. And a passerby walked to one of the stonemasons and said, what are you building? Stonemason held up a brick and said, I'm building a wall. He walked over to the other stonemason and he said, what are you doing? And he says, I'm building a sanctuary for God, the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords. This will be his house. What are you building in your life? Are you building a wall? Or are you building a sanctuary where God can live? Are you just building a wall? Or are you actively creating something special? I will tell you that I believe in my heart of hearts that God has something special for every single person, both in the church that I pastor and anybody that happens to hear this. God wants to do something special in you. And we make up so many reasons why he can't. And God just listens to all of them and says, but you know what? I can. Don't be limited. Don't let anybody else limit you. And certainly don't limit yourself. You can stretch beyond the limits of your job description. God can accomplish great things through your life. These are the things God doesn't see in you. He doesn't see you as unnecessary. He doesn't see you as limited by your age, whether you're young or old. He doesn't see you as limited by your current job description, no matter what it might be. These are things God doesn't see in you. But what does he see? Well, the answer were the words that God gave to Samuel in verse 7 of our text. Do not consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him. Talking about Eliab. The Lord does not look at the things man looks at. Man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. God doesn't see in you the same thing that others see. He sees in you what they can't see. He sees your heart. The world may judge you according to your looks, according to your money, according to your status, or the kind of car you drive, or whether or not you have hair, or listen to polka music, whatever. But God doesn't look at any of that. God doesn't see you as you are. He sees you as you can become. He looks at you the way I look at some of the cars I have. I don't have show-winning cars by any stretch of the imagination, but I don't see them the way they are. I got a 69 VW Beetle that has paint flaking off of it, and you know the motor doesn't run as good as it should. But when I look at it, I don't see that. I mean, I know what it looks like, but when I see it, I see something special. I see a car that is going to be really cool once I'm finished with it. It may still have flaking paint because I kind of like it that way. But it'll run. And I don't see it the way it is. I see it the way it can become. And if I can do that with a 69 Volkswagen Beetle, what can God see in you? It's amazing to me how little we trust God with our lives. My goal has always been to do something so big in the ministry that everybody looked at and said, oh, that had to be God because Jerry is not that good. And you know what? I'm not. I'm not anything special. Why has God called me to be a pastor? It was just the job I had to do. Maybe God hasn't called you to be a pastor. Maybe God's called you to be a Sunday school teacher. Maybe God's called you to be one of the people at Remnant that comes and sets up the chairs every Sunday morning. They're not just people who set up chairs. They're people who come and give of their heart and give of their time, and they're building a church for the people that God's going to touch that morning. The people in the worship band aren't just musicians. They're people who are hoping that God will use them to usher people into worship. A couple of weeks ago at our church, Jesus Reyes, and he's a great kid. He's 16 years old. In fact, I asked him Sunday, do you even drive yet? And he said, no. And I said, well, that's probably a good thing. We call him Zeus. And trust me, he does not look like Zeus. But he went up in front of the church with his guitar and he got ready to play. And I looked over at somebody and said, what's he doing? Nobody told me anything. I mean, I'm just a pastor. Why would anybody tell me anything? And they said, oh, he's going to lead worship. Really? Okay. Because I knew he played bass in our band, but I'd never heard him sing. We never had him sing. And I watched as this 16-year-old young man led a church full of adults into God's presence. It had nothing to do with his musical ability, although he played great. It had nothing to do with his voice, although he sang great. It had everything to do with his heart, with his availability. He laid himself out in front of the church and said, here I am. I know what God's laid on my heart. I'm going to give this a shot. I hope you like it. I hope God uses it. And God did. So what is God calling you to do? What does God want to do in you? When your heart belongs to God, He can use you. And if He's not using you, it may be because you're holding back. Remember what I said earlier? The limiting factor in your life isn't God. It's you. Dare to do something great. Do something scary. Go teach Sunday school. Go talk to your neighbor about God. When your coworker asks you if you're a Christian, boldly proclaim it and don't be afraid. Set up the chairs for Remnant. Bake donuts. We're doing a thing with Challenger Baseball in Imperial right now. It's so exciting. We got to watch as these kids with special needs played baseball. For some of them, it was the first time they got a chance to do something like that. Go sit in the stands and cheer for these kids. Every Saturday morning at 9 o'clock at the field in Imperial, we're going to be there because we just think that's something cool we can do as a church. We're not looking for fame or fortune. We're looking to make a difference in the lives of these kids and their parents. We want them to see that there is a church in town that cares about them. They may never darken the door of Remnant, but I guarantee you, God's going to touch their heart through what we do.
You've been listening to a presentation of Remnant. For more information, visit us at remnantchurchonline.com.